Good morning to everyone. I'd like to be able to update you on some 3 months of activity since the last time in August, the council meetings, when I gave you the last update. So this would include some information about the Feast of Tabernacles that we carried out. See here the Latin American area, stemming from Mexico all the way down to Chile and Argentina. Some 20 countries. Of course, the big one here, which George de Campos is very happy with, is Brazil. And we're very happy now that we have a Portuguese-speaking director over Brazil and Portugal. And this is the first time that we have a Portuguese-speaking director that can speak directly with the people in their own language. So that's a big blessing, and he's already visited the brethren there. We've had some go to the feast as well from Brazil to the Chilean feast site. I'd like to be able to now go forward here. These were the feast sites that we had, five of them, Veracruz, Mexico, Lake Atitlan, Guatemala, Chinauta, Colombia, Las Yungas, Bolivia, and Tongoy, Chile. Total fees attendance was 469. Monthly attendance right now, the average is running 443, so that's about 40 more brethren than we had before the feast. And the total that we have beginning of 2010 was 2,048. So you can see here it's approximately 1,600 that are not attending a UCGIA church right now. But, of course, that is not written in stone. We do have brethren coming over, attending with us every week. We have a team of 7 ministers and 3 deacons helping us out in these areas. We have Mark Roram from San Francisco, California. Mark is a lawyer, and also he went to Mexican schools from approximately when he was around 7 to 17. So he's a proficient speaker. The brethren love Mark Roram to go over there and be with them. Braden Veller from Tampa, Florida. He just got in yesterday from Colombia. Was able to visit the 2 congregations that we have there. One of those congregations had not had a minister visit them for many years. So we're very happy. Braden and Georgia Veller are helping us. Fred Nance, he's an associate pastor in Little Rock, Arkansas. He's been visiting the area as well. Fred went for the feast in Guatemala, and he's already been to Mexico as well. Miguel Gutierrez, he's a Salvadorian that is an elder in the Eagle Rock Church. He just got back from El Salvador, very good visit, saying that we have a very stable, very enthusiastic group. But he also mentions there's a lot of instability in the other groups that are around there. There's just it's not like people picture it, that there's just stability all over the area. There are many brethren that have questions. They feel they can't break out of that group. And so it's slowly we see some of them making direct contact with the ministry. We have a deacon, Scott Hofker from Nebraska. He's been in that area for the last, visiting Latin America for over 11 years with his wife, Gail. Very involved, helping the brethren out there. We'll be listening to Scott as well. We have 2 pastors in the area, Israel Robledo, very dedicated man who is 55. He is a school principal that now is going into full-time pastorate. He helps with the Central American area, Guatemala, El Salvador. We got Honduras. We have Panama and also, in Panama. Just brethren in different areas there. And we have Jaime Gallardo, who is the other, he's a full-time pastor in Chile. He's handling the Southern Cone area of Chile, Argentina, and Uruguay. And then we have the deacons, Raul Machicao. He's been basically over the group in Bolivia for the last 15 years. And I was there when the church started in Bolivia, and Raul Machicao was one of the men that is just foundational. He has stood firm, and there are two different congregations in Bolivia that he serves. And then we have Wanderson Izquierdo, who is helping George de Campos. He's a deacon also. He is Portuguese speaking as well as Spanish. And so he helps out in the area. If you have any questions, just go ahead and raise your hand. We can stop and discuss any of this. But we are team oriented. We are sharing because it's better to have more eyes than less eyes to come in and be able to have that synergy, different men coming in, getting the perspective. Then as a team, we talk about things, and we are here to meet the needs of the congregation. Yes, Roy?
Are you able with this group and yourself to, on a regular basis, to cover all the churches?
Yes, we are.
And speaking, you know, taking care of them in that way?
Yes, we are. And of course, now through the internet, we have live services from Mexico City and also from Santiago, Chile. And we've set up the same system as we have here with a projector, screens. And so sometimes they'll have the brethren meet and they'll have live services. And now we have new hymnals that are in all the areas, which is a big boost to them. And so they just go ahead and sing and have services. We're trying to get the ministry to be there every 2 or 3 weeks so they'll have a live body. And, of course, just a lot of telephone contact, internet. We have contact people throughout the area. Yes, Bill.
Are they meeting every week generally?
Yes, they are meeting every week. They are keeping the Sabbath. They are they're a lot more involved in that sense that, like everything else, they're stepping up. They are now getting involved, and so it's very gratifying to see not just passive sitting, but now there's involvement. I will show you how much involvement some of these people are doing now.
Is the implication by that that in the past most of them were not involved?
Yes.
Or they weren't encouraged?
Yes. Unfortunately, some of these people just felt very passive. And so they're excited because they feel they can be part of serving actively in the church and, in a sense, feeling a little more involved, and participation is important. And you'll hear that. I don't want to be the one just saying that, but you will hear that from these men that they're in different areas. You're not talking about just one group that has been selected. But these are all different men that some of them I didn't know very well, but I knew they could speak Spanish, and so they can give you the impression themselves of what was going on. This is dealing with a good news magazine, Las Buenas Noticias. We had, at the beginning of the year, 19,000 subscribers. It's an approximate figure. And unfortunately, we only received some of the lists up to 10,000 subscribers. So 9,000 of those subscribers, we never got lists for. And so we started a subscriber campaign, which Peter Eddington headed, and he's got the experience with the Google ads, and we gained 10,000 new subscribers in 2 weeks. So that's an amazing figure. And so now we're back to approximately 20,000 subscribers. And that those are the seeds for future growth. So we're back to where we were. And, of course, I imagine many of those other thousands will eventually, if they were truly interested, if God was calling them, we will hear from them as well. Any questions about the Good News Magazine? Yes.
Is there a renewal like Peter was announcing here? I mean, how Peter had
yes.
similar
yes.
thing?
In the past, the Spanish mailing list has not been regularly renewed. I think only once in 15 years had it been renewed. So we plan to do probably an annual renewal campaign to make sure these subscribers are wanting the magazine and are receiving it. And then we will then advertise very inexpensively to replace those as we need to.
Exactly, which we're excited about because, in a sense, in these areas of the world where things are very expensive and you tend to grab what something is free, this way we will continually be bringing in fresh blood, people that are interested, and you know, we're planning to have good news campaigns down there once we get the subscribers up to what the level needs to be. So we're very excited about this. So there are a lot of things that could be going on. Yes?
Has there been any similar activity in Latin America in recent years?
About
promotional activity?
Promotion. Very, very little. That I know of, we had the big period of the Good News lectures maybe 10 years ago. I know I was involved in Chile up to 2001 with those lectures. But now we do have the subscribers for even having more than like 10 years ago. We didn't have as many subscribers because we were just beginning to build up the list. Yes, Scott.
Yes, and I'm not sure it'd be better to answer this, you or Peter, but are there any plans to promote the Spanish Good News in the United States? We obviously have a considerable Spanish-speaking population here in the United States. Any
yes, we currently have several thousand subscribers in the United States.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, Larry?
The Ministry of Justice in Chile, will they have any jurisdiction with regard to our subscriber list as far as making any announcements on that, or like that to be a separate?
Yes, the Ministry of Justice has never got involved with subscriber lists like you would have in Europe where there's a concern about outside countries having addresses. I've never been in...
I was yeah. referring to their involvement with regard to the assets in Chile.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if one of those assets being the subscriber list, which Longarica and his group are withholding.
Correct.
A bargaining chip.
Correct.
Negotiations. I just wonder if the Ministry of Justice has anything in jurisdiction over the division of assets.
Yes. Right now, the Ministry of Justice has all the paperwork to recognize the new regional director who, according to the Constitution and the statutes of the Chilean church, has the jurisdiction to put the president and pastor or not. Right now, that paperwork is already there, but they have not given a verdict yet. And once they give the verdict, we will know. If they give us the favor of it, then we can go ahead and see about the subscriber list. But Ministry of Justice would not be involved as much with what we'd call the intellectual content of subscriber list.
Never been a problem anyway. So.
Right. Exactly. Let's go on. Okay. This is the group from Veracruz, Mexico. See a very sunny area on the eastern coast of Mexico. We have a couple of men already coordinating that group locally. We do have a gentleman who is a minister right now. He's not attending as yet, but it doesn't have to do with any of the current situation. So we're dealing with that. And they meet every Sabbath in Mexico City, and we have different ministers come and visit them, as well as they have live services there. Some do preach. They have given sermons in the past, and so we have the speaking list and schedule for everything. That has grown in Mexico City. We've had 6 more people in the last 2 weeks than we did before. We went from 30 to 36. This is a group in Guatemala. In Guatemala, we had 166 brethren meet right there by the lake with Israel Robledo as the pastor. And by the way, Fernando Solorzano is Mr. Robledo's assistant. And so it's very sad about his son. And Scott Hofker was just there just a few days before. This is the group in Chinauta, Colombia, where we celebrated the Feast of Tabernacles. This group is quite dynamic. And this is a group that now is far more involved than before. Some of these gentlemen are involved now in dubbing the Beyond Today program into Spanish. And so they have a studio, which is in the Second Congregation, Santa Rosa de Lima, and they're using the program and dubbing it themselves. And now you can go to YouTube or other parts, and you can have the Beyond. And that's very important for the brethren, because they can listen to these Beyond Today programs, and the quality is quite good. We've been monitoring them. They're going to get a new computer system that was donated to upgrade theirs. These are the 5 men. As you see in the back, it says Canal 7, which means Channel 7 of that area. And so this is an initiative they hadn't had an opportunity to do before. And Georgia Veller is there. They asked her to stay 2 more weeks. So Brady came back, and Georgia's there with them.
The congregation's okay then. Georgia's there.
She's a doer.
This is the group from Las Yungas, Bolivia. This is Raul Machicao, who is the gentleman who's been coordinating the Bolivian area now for about 15 years. As a deacon, he is an engineer and architect. And also bilingual. And this, and Scott Hofker is at the end there. And this is Gail Hofker. Scott is a doctor in family psychology. So he's been a big help in the area. This is the group from Chile, Tongoy, Chile. In Chile, they had 183. Very dynamic group as well. We have deacons. We have a lot of leaders. There are 2 main congregations, the Santiago, Chile, and the Temuco, Chile. Santiago meeting about 130. And in the southern group, it's 15 to 20 that meet regularly on the Sabbath day. A lot of youths, a lot of potential leadership there. Any questions about these areas? Well, as it says here, of course, we grieve about what has happened. These are my colleagues. I've known them for 30, 35 years. We have tried to reach out. At least 4 different attempts to reach out to them, to have them reconsider their decision not to continue to be subject to the governing authorities. We've had letters sent to these gentlemen. We have basically waited 5 months to give them time to reconsider. They have been contacted by telephone. I've reached out to them several times, and also Mr. Luker talked to Eduardo Hernandez, the pastor that came and spoke here with Mr. Luker and others. He asked them to act as a liaison or a mediator and to contact these Latin ministers to see if any of them wanted to come up and to talk with the administration. And none of them did. And so that letter was sent out after 5 months to ask them, what is your decision on this? Because we cannot have two competing organizations meeting on the Sabbath. Yes, Mr. Luca.
Just a qualification on when I talked to Eduardo, it was before the Feast of Tabernacles on a phone call where he called me about coming in. And so I said, Eduardo, since you and I know one another better, and you, of course, are bilingual and I'm not, would you please contact the other men and see if they are willing to come in? So that's when it happened. It wasn't when he came in personally at that time. So it was via just a technical thing. Right. It was via telephone before the Feast of Tabernacles when we were working out the timing for him to come in.
Exactly.
And asking if he would contact the others.
Exactly. And at that time, Eduardo was still with Leon Walker, so he had access to these men a lot better. Some have said, well, maybe if you would have had someone else contact. Well, we've had others attempt to contact them as well, and with no positive results. The doors have been slammed any time we've tried to get the version of the council and administration to the brethren, because many of these brethren are still isolated. They have not heard anything about the other side. And some of them don't have internet, live very modest lives. They just come on the Sabbath and just listen to what the minister is saying to them. I'd like to dispel some false information that is out there on the internet as well. You know, when a regional director of the church refuses to just to come up to the home office to discuss matters with the Council of Elders and the administration, and then refuses to accept his removal, and he's offered the possibility of other posts, which he was, and then he refuses and takes ministers and brethren with him, that is not acceptable. That goes against the biblical principles. It goes against our governing principles, and that we are subject to the authority above them, as these men know clearly. I'd like to let you now in on what decisions from them we have had to face and then react. We have had to react to the decisions that they have made. This is not something that was precipitated because of something that originated from us. It originated when the regional director refused to follow the orders and then went ahead and took these ministers and brethren with him. The June 23rd, 2010 letter, which was signed by most of the ministry in Latin America. This is the English translation. This is what we have had to face. They signed and said, we, the undersigned ministers, consider the removal of Mr. Walker as an unjust, unethical, and unfair action. Therefore, we are giving you the opportunity to reconsider your decision. However, your decision to remove him as our regional director still stands. By the way, this is a public letter. Then we want to express the following. We inform you that we will not accept anybody else to be our director. None of the undersigned ministers will accept Mr. Walker's removal. we will not accept anyone as his replacement. If the council or the president decides to impose another person against our will as our director, we will not accept that individual. And if he attempts to come to our areas as a new regional director, we will not receive him, nor will he be allowed to speak in our congregation. So this is the way it started. And how do you react to something like this? Well, of course, who initiated this type of approach where it's a threat that if you do not do our will, we are not going to accept anything or anyone that comes down here? The problem is that it sets a precedent in the church. If this is accepted, and a precedent means an acceptable law, something that is accepted now as a rule, and once it's allowed, the next time someone will say, well, he did it, I can get away with it too. See, the cycle can be repeated. Okay, let's have a local area where a pastor is removed. And then you have the local elders say, well, we are not going to accept that. And we will not accept anyone that you send. And we will not accept the governing documents that give us that right, give you that right. So if that is not accepted in the local area, it's not acceptable as far as the United Church of God and International Association. Especially since in Latin America, you do not have governing national councils. What we have there are legal entities, because even if you are governed by the regional director that is selected from the United States, that's the way it was set up, you do have to have some legal representation just to operate. But that did not mean that we had a national council that was the governing board that elected its pastors and that had all of this. It wasn't that way. It was governed as an administrative entity from the regional director over the area, and the regional director was subject to the president and to the board here, the Council of Elders. He's a paid U.S. minister that was over the area. That was the accepted norm.
Mario?
Yes.
Do you see that changing now?
Well, that's up to Mr. Luker, of course. There are recommendations to to have a similar structure as senior pastors that can go into that area and be able to help direct it. And we'll have to see. Most of these areas are relatively small, with one congregation or two congregations, and to have a national board would be just a huge umbrella over very small. I mean, some places have 25 brethren, and maybe a deacon. So if you have a national board, it's not like you have pastors that can be over the area like others. If you just have one pastor, it's very difficult to just have a national board where everybody is, you have interchange of ideas, and there are peers that can share the authority. That's most of these just have always just had one pastor, except places like in Mexico where they did have several. But they never set themselves up as a national board as well. Any other questions about this? Let's continue. Now, the question we should ask is, have we separated from UCGIA in Latin America? Or have they separated from UCIGA? In other words, who was the one that separated? We've got brethren that said, no, we want to be part of UCGIA. We want to continue to be administered as we have had in the past. Some say they were dismissed, like we've cut all the brethren off. We have never taken any actions. Those brethren are open. They are still considered as such. But no actions have been taken against the brethren. They have chosen to keep attending non-UCGIA congregations. And we can't have two competing organizations in the same area according to our rules of association. So that is the problem we are facing. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 5, the Good News Bible says, an athlete who runs in a race cannot win the prize unless he obeys the rules. Paul was just saying, look, Paul had a governing structure in these areas where he went and set up pastors and elders. And can you imagine if the Apostle Paul was going and saying, well, everybody now has a right to take brethren with them and separate from being under the apostles. No, it was a solid structure. And so we all signed a document that when we received our credentials, we were going to be subject to these governing documents. We were going to play according to the rules that we had set up based on biblical principles. And so if we break the rules and say, that's okay, the important thing is forgiveness. You can continue breaking those rules. Brethren and members, we have just signed our death warrant with that. Because then we're going to have a chaos. We're going to have people that are going to say, well, he didn't respect the rules and he got away with it. I can do the same. Setting the wrong precedent. So here are the future plans. Number one, we will continue to take care of the flock under the guidance of Mr. Luker, the Spanish Regional Director, and of the Council of Elders. We have a team of ministers and developed leaders. There are very fine people. They're going to step up to the plate and get the gospel powerfully out to this area. These people need God's truths. Number two, the path of reconciliation is working within the governing documents, not outside of them, as some wish. So reconciliation is not capitulation of our founding principles that are based on biblical principle, biblical guidelines. Reconciliation is not capitulation. It's not giving up on our governing documents, making a respecter of persons. Well, in this case, yes, we are going to break the rules for able to get reconciliation. Reconciliation has to be within our the governing documents. Any comments here? Okay, let's go on. Number three, we will provide spiritual, financial, and legal help to all these areas. The scholarships for the youths in the universities are being provided. We have wonderful leaders there. We have a wonderful opportunity to serve them in that way. Not let them be abandoned. That's their great fear, that we will abandon them for the sake of trying to somehow bring back others without subjecting ourselves to those governing documents. That's their great fear. Number four, the term faithful has been bantered around. I've read it in the last couple of weeks on the internet. The definition is firm adherence to duty. A person that is faithful in his job, faithful to his wife, faithful in the church. UCG bylaws 8.6.2, the duties of the Council of Elders, it says, number one, to select and remove all officers, agents, and employees, to prescribe duties for them, to approve their compensation, and to require from them their faithful service. So when they talk about faithful, it's not talking about, well, the person might have, we're not going to discuss the relationship they have with God. We're not going to judge that. We're talking about if it's a faithful minister in the church, it is a person that is adhering to the duties, to the governing documents. He is faithful as he has subscribed himself to be. In this case, we've had gentlemen who have not fulfilled that faithfulness of duty as far as our governing documents are concerned. We have a pastor that these men were employed by the Home Office that were serving in Latin America. We have to ask, who are the ones who have been faithful by the definitions of our founding documents? See, it's not a term that you can just throw around. If you're faithful, it is because you are following the rules and the principles that have been set up. When we were credentialed, we said we would follow this system. Whether it was positive for us doesn't mean we're always going to be getting our way or that our decisions are going to prevail. But we are going to work within the framework of these founding principles. All right, gentlemen, any questions about the area? Yes, Mr. Luker.
I just mainly want to thank you, Mario, for being a man who believes in these principles, believes in United and our founding documents based upon the Bible. We all know the most important thing is the Word of God, the spiritual principles that our governing documents were founded upon. You know, as we all prayed and fasted about that when United began. So, you know, I just want to thank you because I know this has been very difficult for you and your family and others, a very difficult time for you and the brethren in Latin America. And you've done a wonderful job of standing strong and faithful. And I certainly want to acknowledge that to the council here and thank Mario. He's had a grueling battle, as you all know, and it's taken a toll, but he's a man with faith in God and trust in God. And so I just want to thank you, you know, watching this, the hard work and the effort, and, you know, especially under fire and under great persecution and opposition, that you've not, even though you and your wife have had to battle emotional feelings and ups and downs, I just want to, you know, publicly here before the council acknowledge your dedication and hard work and to thank you very, very much.
Well, thank
thank
you.
Your wife for us, okay?
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Jordan.
We appreciate your presentation as well. I had a question with regard to indigent pastoral training. You've got two new employees, basically, this is Giardo and Gisel Rivaldo. I was wondering if you have any plans in mind with regard to training these fellows. Are they brought up here or something down there, or is that still being kind of contemplated?
Yes, thankfully, these men have been pastoring for years in their areas. Mr. Gallardo is highly educated. He teaches physical therapy at a university before he was hired on. Made far more than a pastor's salary. He was willing to give all of that up and move to Santiago from his home in Valdivia. And he's been pastoring the Temuco and Valdivia churches for 10 years. And he's been highly trained, knows the doctrines, very intelligent, and yet a very humble person. I hope one day you'll get to meet him. Certainly, we do train him when we're there, guiding him. We'll see the plans may be for him to come to the GCE. That would be very encouraging. I'm not worried about his training. He's like 45 years old, still relatively young man. His wife is also a physical therapist, by the way, who also gave up her job to serve in the pastoral area. So they took two big salaries out of their income. And then we have Israel Robledo, a school principal, also basically set himself up very well. He was building a small office center that's almost totally built in his hometown of San Marcos. Now he's got to give that up and come to Guatemala City, which is about 2.5 hours away, and serve the pastoring area there. He's been pastoring those churches in San Marcos and Quetzaltenango, which they call Chela for short, which we like it a lot better. And so he's highly trained as well, and he's 55. So they're not rookies. They're not these young 20s, men in their 20s that don't have much experience. They're very fine ministers, preachers. So I'm very pleased with both of them. I just think they're, and they stood firm. They put the congregations and they put their reputations online, because they've suffered tremendous persecution and pressure to yield, and they have not. And believe me, it wasn't for economic reasons, because both of them had good jobs and they didn't need this. So we're very thankful they did. Yes, Roy.
Well, I think I can speak for the rest of the council that you can reassure the Latin brethren we're not going to abandon that. The council and the administration are certainly going to continue to support them. I had a couple of questions. One, using the Good News magazine, has that been very productive in the past as far as generating growth, new members, co-workers, and all that type of thing? We've always heard that a lot of the growth comes from direct contact down in that area of the world. And it seems that one of the deficiencies we've had through that whole region has been a lack of training future leaders. And has any consideration been given to working with those who show potential and bringing them along? Because we've gone for years without, I think, really doing that in that area.
I've noticed young men with tremendous potential that are now in their own careers, which we could have used, and there are ways to bring them and train them here. We certainly are going to look into that. I had the honor to send during a period of time, maybe 10 years, we sent 10 young people to Ambassador College. And I know it's there you could get a special visa, but there's a lot we can do in the future. And we have Jaime Gallardo as a pastor right now who is training a young man who is in his mid-20s. And we're looking at him as stepping up to the plate. And there are others in the area. Yes.
Mara, has there been any thought given to a camps for the youth down there this coming year? I hope so. I'd also like to encourage us to look at how we could incorporate it within our youth corps, some projects to send some of our young people from the States and Canada, Australia, wherever they may be, to those areas for language immersion, but also in conjunction with some type of a project down there that might benefit the churches as well as our own, the overall mission of the church. But
using our people, especially young adults and young people who are studying Spanish, to send them into those areas in some type of project. I think that would be a prime ground for development in that area.
Yes, yeah, so we have had some students in the past come down. I know when I was a pastor in Chile, we had some from the youth corps come down, and we certainly want to continue with that. We have two youth camps now, because in the southern hemisphere, summer is during our winter. So I went ahead and as Mr. Luker's agent approved helping them, which is a very modest sum, less than $2,000, for them in Guatemala to have a youth camp. So they're going to have that in December. And also in Chile, they have a youth camp. So they're going to continue, and they're very excited about that. So we're going to continue, and we will see. When the brethren realize these are separated brethren, when they realize finally that they are in a different organization, because they've been told, no, we're still part of UCGIA, and we still have the credentials. And once they realize what has actually happened, then they are going to be able to choose a lot more wisely and objectively than they've been able to do so far. And we have to provide a home, an atmosphere that they are going to want to be a part of. Any other questions? Yes, Bill?
Yeah. Mario, what can we do as a council to reassure these people that we're going to look after them? Is there anything concrete?
That's a good question.
Even something that is just an attitude we can convey to them about how we feel about them.
Yes, there'll be two ways. One, which is a very practical and simple way, would be send a letter from the council to these different areas, so that it can be read. Because sometimes they feel, well, they're getting it by proxy, and yes, we know we're receiving support, but it's always kind of a second-hand information. They can get something from the council. Yes, Mr.
I'm following up on that. I think Bill raises a really good idea. I think of John's a circular letter in the Book of Revelation. It would be nice that if we sent out a council letter, that we could individualize. There probably would need to be a collective letter to some that we can't hit. But how nice to make it really personal, because the Latin Brethren are all together, but they're also in these pictures that you just showed us, that if we could send that council letter and personalize it to each congregation and their appointed elder, I think that is, and that so that they know that they're not just a part of a mass down there, but that we recognize each of these congregations that have and individuals that have stepped up. What do you think about that, Mario?
Yes, that'd be very.
I like to really nice. See it. Really, we have the time this week to really make something very special for these courageous and dedicated brethren. And if I can just add on, Mario, thank you very much for, as Denny said, you stepped up, stepped in, you and Cotty, because men and women, they're a pastoral team. And that's what United Church of God is about. It's not just our ministers and our men, but it's our ladies. It's all of our members together working with the ministry to do what the United Church of God was first dedicated to do. So thank you.
Okay. I think we could do that as we have more time, too. I think just a letter from the council directed to these areas so we could get it out to them, maybe to be read on the Sabbath. That would be very encouraging, because we're just having these meetings. Yes, Vic?
Yeah. And then there are things that I've learned here that I just was not aware of. For example, the camps and Darius' suggestion of youth corps. I think it's very important to reassure them both that we are there for them spiritually, but also, you know, we've just sent them $25,000, you know, for scholarships. And while we want to write a letter that's private to the congregation, there ought to be a public letter too, so everybody can see that we have been committed to the people, and specifics of what we had done, scholarships, in camps, in projected youth corps, and so forth, that this is not a ragtag group of refugees. These are viable churches with pastors, deacons, programs, you know, life goes on.
I mentioned two things. One would be the letter. The other one would be personal visits by council members, and to just at least to have the presence. And if any could accompany me on some trip, we can just do simultaneous translation. You can speak on the Sabbath day, but it's important to show them that it's not just me or this group, but some from the council. I know that we have a budget to visit the outlying areas in the United States, and I think, again, having more eyes looking at speaking to the brethren, I know Mr. Eddington could also speak as we have this Latin. Mr. Eddington went to the feast in Chile, and could you just mention a couple of things right now, Mr. Eddington? Would you like to step up here for a second?
Okay.
Okay.
And I can say more later when the other fellow's on the phone too, if you want, about the situation in a more private setting. But the one of the main things that they said to us and to the Fenchels was, don't forget us. Don't forget about us. They tried over the years, for a decade, to write to the Home Office with their concerns and what they saw happening and the way they were being treated. But often their letters just got sent back to the regional director or to their local pastor, and they felt betrayed. And so they're saying, don't forget about us. Remember that we're here. Visit us, write to us, support the work that we're trying to do. And so that was one of the main things. They said, you're here for the feast, but don't forget we're down here when you go home.
Any other questions?
The point I was going to raise was about the going down and speaking, and that people should not be put off by the fact that they don't speak Spanish. When I go to Ghana, in the rural areas, most people do not speak English, so I rely on the simultaneous translations. And people just appreciate the fact that they're getting a visitor from the United States. A lot of these places around the world feel very isolated, especially when they're small groups, and they just really feel good when they get somebody coming from overseas. Makes them feel connected. One thing I would add to that too, I think you do this in Latin America anyway, but you know, we need to be thinking about this for all areas around the world. We need somebody from the U.S. in each country or at each feast site every year. We've not always been able to do that. We need to make sure we do. That is the most important time of the year. Also, if possible, for the Passover and Unleavened Bread, but I think the Feast of Tabernacles is more important, and we just need to ensure that happens every year.
Good point. Yeah, Aaron Dean was able to go down to the area of Chile and Argentina for a feast, and that was an eye-opening experience as well. Okay, gentlemen, thank you for your time. Turn the meeting over to Mr. Rhodes again.